This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello one and all, a warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner, Dave Tindall, ready for the golfing week. We've got two events to preview, the Abu Dhabi Championship and the Desert Classic on the PGA Tour as well. First of all, sitting opposite me this week here in the William Hill Radio studio is Dave Tindall. Good morning to you, Mr. Tindall.
Hello, Dave. Yeah, we're in the morning today, underway quickly because, of course, we've got a Wednesday start in Abu Dhabi.
We have indeed. We've got to talk about last week, though, Mr. Tindall. A 40-1 winner on this particular podcast. Matt Kuchar doing the business in Hawaii. Great pick.
Yeah, thank you. It was not exactly rocket science, was it? But one of those ones where you say a player who's just won, playing on a course he likes at 40s in not a world-class field. Doesn't always happen that week and that often on the PGA Tour, but that one looked fairly obvious and he did well. And I think that win at the Mayakoba clearly helped him on that final day. It's one of those ones. I actually went to sleep when he was two shots behind.
Yeah, he had early Sunday wobble.
I thought, here we go. This is another each way, sort of. Gonna have to settle for fifth or something. So I went to sleep with him two shots behind, but he had a putt coming up on the ninth to pull within one.
Yeah.
So I sort of fell asleep, and then I think I woke up for a wee in the middle of the night, like older people do, and looked and thought, "Wow, he's won by a mile. He's won by four shots." So that was nice.
You made a coherent argument why the price of 40-1 significantly underestimated his chance, and he righted the ship and won by four in the end.
Yeah, and that's now
early Sunday wobble.
Yeah, that's now the second year in succession the Mayakoba winner's gone on to win Sony. So there's a little link.
Very good. What did you make to the rumours about him underpaying his caddy in the with the win at the Mayakoba?
Yeah.
Tom Gillis stirred that particular hornet's nest on Twitter. Kuchar's comments were interesting. He said he didn't give him the full 10%, but it wasn't $3,000 either. So somewhere in between, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know where there's going to be.
It was very interesting, though, wasn't it? There was a hell of a lot on Twitter about it.
Yeah, and he's meant to be this sort of the good guy who smiles and is lovely. Someone else put a clip of when Andrew Coulthard went to interview him and he just blanked him. So I saw that at the time. I thought, is he being sort of like, is it a bit of bants?
Yeah.
Or he was being rude, but he seems a nice fella, but I don't know. That's a bit odd, isn't it? Not paying a caddy. It just looks awful, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You big American golf man not paying Mexican caddy.
Yeah.
Not good.
Let's move on to this week then. We've got the Abu Dhabi Championship, first of all, on the European Tour. Good field assembled as well this week. Dustin Johnson heads the betting here with William Hill at 11-2. Brooks Koepka is 9-1. Tommy Fleetwood, 10-1. Henrik Stenson is 16s. Louis Oosthuizen is 20-1. Thomas Peters, 20-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 20-1. And it's 25-1 and bigger the rest. And we've got an extended Middle East swing on the European Tour, with this event in Abu Dhabi, followed by the Dubai Desert Classic and the newly conceived Saudi International is the last weekend in January. The European Tour, they need the money, don't they, and the sponsorship support, and there's a lot of cash in the Middle East.
Yes, and the Saudi one's not without controversy. I've seen a few articles saying journalists should ban, you know, not mention it. I've seen other people taking a dim view of some of those who have decided to go there. Tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, it is tough, isn't it? But they're obviously chasing the pound or the euro, aren't they?
Yes, or whatever it is over there. Dinar, I don't know what it is. But it's the money over there, yeah. And obviously it slots in well with these two. But I don't know. Rory gets a lot of grief, doesn't he, for sort of not playing? So maybe others should get some grief. I don't know. But
Justin Rose being one, perhaps.
Well, yeah, he seems to have everything perfectly lined up, and then he's playing there, and he's sort of changed clubs to Honma, and you're thinking, what are you doing that for? More money? I don't. strange, isn't it? When I don't understand people who have loads of money who just chase after more money.
It does seem to me like I'm just taking Rose as an example here. Yes. When comparing him with Rory McIlroy,
yeah,
Rose seems to have that golden boy image that McIlroy doesn't.
Well, yeah, it seems the same. Well, it's almost like Kuchar and Rose are sort of, right, we know they're nice people. It's going to be difficult to ever move away from that narrative, but you can do if you want, can't you? Whereas Rory, he's sort of been seen as a bit of a, you know, a loose
European
cannon.
Tall pariah, hasn't he, really?
Yeah.
That's the way it's been made out, anyway. Yeah.
Just because, A, he speaks, he sort of says what he thinks more,
yeah,
and yet he's doing similar things to other people.
Mm. On to this week, anyway.
Enough of the politics.
Yeah, this is a pretty typical desert track, this one. It's designed by Peter Haradine, plays to a par of 72. It's long, measuring 7,583 yards, and Tommy Fleetwood is going for his third straight title in this event. And you think of Fleetwood and you think of ball striking, and as Matt Cooper has made mention of in his excellent preview on Roto World, nine of the 12 winners at this event have ranked inside the top 10 for greens in regulation. And even though that's something of an archaic stat now, would you say, greens in reg, it's quite relevant this week, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. I mean, you can find strokes gained on the European Tour if you sort of hunt around a bit, but historically you've not got those numbers to fall back on.
Yeah.
So you need to go off greens in reg, and yeah, it does seem to make sense, that link.
And basically it's a second shot golf course, this one. It's pretty wide off the tee. The wind can be a big factor, though, at Abu Dhabi, and it's due to blow on Friday and Saturday, which in essence is the weekend, given that this is a Wednesday start. Any more detail about what to expect or what this golf course demands?
Yeah, the European Tour website had a bit of sort of extra course news saying it had been drier than normal. I mean, can it be drier than normal there? I thought it rained for 70 days a year. And the fairways are meant to be a bit narrow, but I don't know, you always read these sort of things and then they just go and shoot daft scores anyway. So yeah, it's a par 72. There's going to be plenty of birdies out there. The wind tends to pick up in the afternoon at this venue. So
it does. I've looked through the weather forecast and it does look like it's seriously going to blow on Friday and Saturday, and it's going to be benign the first 2 days.
Yes.
Which is interesting. It's going to get up to around about 20 miles an hour with 30 mile an hour gusts Friday and Saturday. So that could put the cat amongst the pigeons, yeah, so to speak.
And I was looking for the first round stats, and typically the winners here have had a morning tea time on Thursday or Wednesday in round one.
Yeah.
I think you get off to a good start and you kind of then you're set for the week. So I think that could be important this week, because the weather for round one, it does seem to pick up in the afternoon. So I think if you get your score in early, as previous winners have done perhaps, then I think you're well set. I mean, Fleetwood last year, joint leader after round one, went on to win. So I may be looking at those with an earlier tea time Thursday who can get a score. And then,
Wednesday.
Yeah, let's just say round one.
Yeah, round one.
And then can sort of hold on to it a little bit, maybe.
I've got two picks.
Me too, yes.
Given that you had a winner last week, it would be folly of you not to lead off here.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go fairly obvious with my first pick and go for Louis Oosthuizen.
Okay, 20-1.
20-1, yeah. He's got a 7:30 start from the 10th tee on Wednesday, round one. So that's good. He's not played here for quite a while, just hasn't maybe fitted into his schedule. But when he did play this course, he did very nicely indeed, Louis Oosthuizen. And he was fifth in 2010 and runner-up in 2009. He's only played it once since. So two of his last three visits, he's got a second and a fifth. So he's got that solid course form. The thing with him, though, I think he really did tick off a bucket list item by winning the South African Open.
Definitely. That was emotional, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he's normally as calm as you get, but that was a massive thing for him. He'd been trying to win that forever. And you could sort of see it coming. He'd come fifth in the CIMB Classic, third in the Ned Bank. So his form was there. He just needs to get over maybe a psychological hurdle.
Yeah.
And he did. So, I mean, that was only early December. So it's only last month still. So that's fresh in his memory. Followed that up with 7th in the Alfred Dunhill. Probably had a nice Christmas break since, but I still think that good form and that confidence will be riding high. So I thought 20-1 was a decent enough each way price for Oosthuizen in this field.
Oosthuizen the selection then at 20-1 for Mr. Tyndall, headline pick. I've just checked the tee time. I didn't check the tee times before I came in here, right. And both my players are out late on the
Well, it's, it might be an edge or not, but
hopefully it won't matter too much.
It was quite an edge in Hawaii last week, by the way.
Yeah, there was a massive
about
difference.
Two and a half shots.
Yeah,
between that late early had.
Yeah, which I suppose
which was looking, bad for Putnam.
Yeah,
wasn't
Putnam.
It?
Yeah,
yeah, he was on the other half. As was Spieth. If you trying to give him an excuse.
Well, I think we're running out of excuses, aren't we? No top ten since the Masters for Jordan Spieth. I'm going with Benny Arne as my number one pick here at 40-1. He is out late on the Wednesday. I'm always interested in the South Korean when it comes to desert events because he's such an outstanding record in them. And given that his last start yielded a top 10 in the Australian Open, I thought 40s was a decent price. He actually led after 36 holes in Australia, but just faltered on the Saturday there. And he finished 40th in this event last year, but prior to that had finished 12th, 5th and 13th on his three previous starts. And he's had three starts in the Dubai Desert Classic as well and finished 13th, 4th and 6th. And he's had a couple of outings in the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai as well and finished 4th and 13th. And his BMW PGA Championship win came at Wentworth, where it can be tough to pick the wind and you rely on ball striking in that event. And he wasn't actually quite as sharp last season as he has been in the past. But this is one of his favourite tracks, and hopefully he can put it all together this week and provide us with at least a place at 40-1. Benny Arne, he's my first selection.
Yeah, I think that's a solid pick, Dave. Yeah. Second pick, I'm going to delve into three figures.
I am as well, actually.
Yeah, I wonder if it's the same person. I'm going for Alexander Levy.
It's not the same person.
Okay. Yeah, the Frenchman used to be a bit rubbish. I don't know what the opposite of a desert rat is. But he wasn't one.
The mountain goat.
Yes. He used to sort of get wind in his eyes and run away. He just didn't like it at all. But I think he maybe solved it last year when he was seventh in this event and then went to the Dubai Desert Classic, which is next week's event, and was fourth. So maybe he's turned the corner. Although, actually, you look back at this tournament and he was actually third with a round to play in 2015. So you add that into last year's seventh, where he was also third at halfway. I think this is a course that he likes. I mean, he's very much a fire at the flag sort of guy, isn't he?
He is.
Knows how to win. Maybe in that sense, he's a bit like Lara Tharble, who can be hot and cold, and he's won this event before.
Have I stumbled upon my man.
Right. But Levy, I think possibly last year he started well. He got those two good performances here, one in Morocco, and then I think the talk of him making the Ryder Cup team did his head in a little bit. I think he got a bit, oh my goodness,
yeah,
and it affected him. But he came back after that. He was 10th in the Turkish Airlines Open. That was a good performance, decent enough in the DP World Tour Championship. It's good to even reach that, to be honest.
Yeah.
So under to one, he's got an early tee time on Wednesday. It's slightly speculative, but I just thought there's enough there for a player who knows how to win and has got some course form.
Yeah, I think mine's obviously similar. It's 100-1. They are slightly speculative, aren't they? But I always think Pablo Larrazábal is at his best when the sun's on his back.
Yeah,
and he's mentioned that on Twitter on numerous occasions as well. And having finished 9th in the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa on his most recent start at the end of last year, hopefully he can give this podcast a good run at three figures. It's been a case of feast or famine at this course with Larrazábal. He won it in 2014, runner-up finished 2 years ago as well. So when his game is on, he can contend at this venue. He's also had three missed cuts in his last seven visits as well. I like the fact that he contended in Qatar last year, which is is an exposed desert track,
yeah,
which has similarities with this one. And I thought 100-1, he was definitely worth chancing, Larrazábal, so he's my second selection.
Yeah, he's, like you say, he could miss the cut by five, or he gets a taste for it and he's right in there.
Absolutely. Before we go on to honourable mentions, then, this is something we mentioned last week on the podcast. Never mind your 40-1 winner last week. You let the hashtag your odds pick down.
Right.
That's more important than that 40-1 winner.
So me letting down something that was half the price. Yeah, fine with that. Yeah, Adam Hadwin was rubbish, wasn't he, last week?
But, well, his recovery round was pretty good, wasn't it, to make the
but
cut?
But he got off on the wrong foot. And
his wife was tweeting that she was checking flight details for the flight out of there before he went out on the Friday and made the cut.
Yeah, so that was a shame. And you had Charles Howell, didn't you, who just did Charles Howell thing.
It was typical Charles Howell, wasn't it? Yeah, backed into that top 10.
Yeah.
Without ever looking like contending.
No, although he did win fairly recently, to be fair to him. Yeah. So we've got another one, haven't we?
We have. The hashtag Your Odds this week is on Abu Dhabi. You'll see loads of hashtag Your Odds already on the William Hill website and on the app. And we're going with a similar theme to last week, picking a couple of guys, one each, for top 10 finishers away from the outright selection. So give us your top 10 pick this week.
Yeah, so maybe last year there's a bit of a theme of guys who haven't won for ages winning again. We've just mentioned Howell. Matt Kuchar hadn't won for about 4 or 5 years. He went and won. Another one was Lee Westwood, who ended a barren spell of 4 or 5 years with victory in the Nedbank Golf Challenge. And he'd been fifth at Valderrama before that. Obviously, keep mentioning ball striking. That's obviously a ball striker's course. So I think this is a good venue for Westwood to continue his recent resurgence. He's now got his girlfriend caddying for him. He's sort of amicably split with Billy Foster. And I think it's a new girlfriend. It's put a pep in his step, I think. Mm. Just, you know, a bit of a change up. And it certainly had a very good effect. So I think this is another course where we can see Westwood play well. He was runner-up in 2008. Eighth 2 years ago, 2017. That's all we need, isn't it? Eighth will do. We're top 10 and ties again, so that's absolutely fine. Runner-up in the Made in Denmark. So I think he's been in good form for a while, and I just think he's a bit full of the joys of spring a little bit, Lee Westwood. So I think he's quite a solid contender to sneak into a top 10.
Yeah, I'm going with Joost Luiten as my pick here. He's maybe not quite ready to win after his return from that lengthy wrist injury, but he's got a decent shot of finishing inside the top 10, in my opinion. He won in Oman last season before the problems with the wrist, and he's all about finding greens in regulation when his iron game is on song. Good ball striker, and he's had some decent results since his comeback too. And not only that, he's finished inside the top 10 three times in his last five visits to Abu Dhabi. It should go well. So I thought that was reasonable. Hashtag your odds bet that one. Lee Westwood and Joost Luiten both to finish inside the top 10, crucially including the ties there as well. And it's 25-1. If you fancy that, that's on the hashtag your odds page.
So right, we're putting a point each week on these.
We are. And hopefully we'll get one in early season.
Two for the year.
Two for the year, that will be fine. And it doesn't have to be top 10 every week. We might change it up.
Okay.
We can always change it up with top 5s, top 20s, top player markets, that sort of thing as well. So maybe we'll change it up next week. So Westy and Luiten, 25-1 both to finish in the top 10, including the ties. Now, before we move on to the Desert Classic, honourable mentions and those at the top of the market. I thought Dustin Johnson had an outstanding chance. He is 11-2 in the betting, but he started slowly both times he's played this championship and then finished 9th and 2nd.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be off his game at Kapalua, but still finish 4th.
Yeah, I could see him doing something similar. Maybe with just the fact that it'll get windy on the weekend, I could see him maybe leading and then finish 2nd.
Okay.
Something like that. I just think someone might get their head in front of him. I think that wind might just be the factor that knocks him back.
And 11-2, not...
You could see it as a sort of each way back to nothing, but I don't think it's quite... There's enough good players in the field who could get past him. So, yeah, it's just sort of... I'm not thinking he's got a better chance here than he's had in numerous other events.
Mm. He's playing alongside Oosthuizen and Stenson as well in that early tee time. So he'll be looking, because I think he's opened with 72 twice, or 72, 73, something like that anyway. And he's been playing catch up from an early stage. He'll be hoping for a low round early to set him up for the week.
Yeah.
Fleetwood, Koepka?
Fleetwood, the only thing with Fleetwood is, can you really win an event three times? It doesn't happen very often, does it? It's almost that I'm thinking, as he used up. You know, will there be a bad break in there somewhere?
And is he the same quality of player as Koepka at a very similar price, I suppose, as well, you could say?
Well, on this course, you've got to knock a few points off him, haven't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just, plenty of great players have won this event, but others, like McIlroy, were just second forever, weren't they, and third and fourth. So maybe they'll occupy some of the places, but I'm just not excited by their prices, to be honest. I think Stenson at 16s is at my each way level.
Yeah.
I think he came back to form from injury trouble, didn't he, at the end of last year. So I think he could be moving into some form.
I think he'll go well.
I think he's got three top tens, a couple of eights, and a third the last 3 years here. So I can't see any reason why he's out of the frame.
I must admit, the one name that leaped out to me, but maybe just that slight bit too short, was Hao Tong Li. I think he's going to have a fantastic event and a fantastic season. I can see him contending for major championships. And he finished last year in terrific form. Eventually ran out of a bit of steam, didn't he, in the DP World Tour Championship when finishing 30th. But prior to that, HSBC Champions was 11th, Turkish Airlines Open 2nd, the Nedbank in South Africa 5th. I think Hao Tong Li is primed for a huge 2019.
Yeah, I think similar maybe for Thomas Peters. I think he's ready to go again, and this is always a great tournament for him. Three top fives the last 4 years, but his 20s, we sort of collared him a bit, haven't we? I think Thomas Peters, Tyrrell Hatton, same sort of price, always does well here. So yeah, it's a quite a good front end of the market, to be honest. And then Matt Wallace, who's, you know, could have won the DP World Tour Championship, he's out at 33s. There's plenty in there who could you know, give you a run for your money if you're looking at the favourites.
Okay, let's move on to the Desert Classic 2019. Slightly confusing given we've got the Dubai Desert Classic next week. They've not got a sponsor for this event at the moment. It was the Korea Builder last year. It's been the Humana. It was, it was the Bob Hope years and years ago.
What's happened to Malcolm Korea Builder?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or whoever he was. And the Humana.
Yeah.
That was something Bill Clinton was involved with, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's always been
an event that's been sponsored by, or often been sponsored by, a charitable organisation, hasn't it? But they've lost the sponsor this year anyway, so it's just
the Desert Classic.
It's in the desert, so they've called it Desert, and loads of golf tournaments used to be called Classics or are called Classics, so they've just put the two together.
Why can't you just call it the Bob Oak Classic?
I've got no idea.
What would stop you?
I don't think
anything. Bob Oak's people wanting money?
Maybe. I've no idea.
But they get the prestige, they get his name back out there, and you get.
It was always the Bob Hope, wasn't it?
Records sales.
Yeah.
Old film. I think the Bing Crosby there, possibly. All the great films he was in. He sang as well. They did everything in those days, didn't they? Tap danced, like Bruce Forsyth.
Multi-purpose
better
performers.
Bruce Forsyth, I would say.
Yeah. Anyway, John Rahm is 7-1 to win it and defend his title. Justin Rose is 9-1. Patrick Cantlay is 16-1. Charles Howell III is 20-1 with William Hill. Adam Hadwin is 25s. Andrew Putnam, 28-1. Aaron Wise is 30-1, and it's 33-1 bar. It's actually the 60th anniversary of this event, and it's a pro-am, as it always has been, played over three courses. We've got the Pete Dye-designed PGA West Stadium course, which is the most difficult of the trio, and those that make the 54-hole cut will finish their championship there on Sunday. But before the cut, all 156 players will get the opportunity to feast on the Nicklaus and La Quinta courses, which yield particularly low scores. And La Quinta actually played as the easiest par 72 on the PGA Tour last season. And last year's event was won by the Spaniard, John Rahm, who beat Andrew Landry in a playoff. He opened with a 62 and shot a pair of 67s on the more difficult West. And I suppose there's potential draw biases here as well. There could be.
Yes, yeah, so we don't know the
draw
yet, which is a bit of a setback.
I don't think it would be enough to factor into my...
No, I don't think I'd see the draw and go, right, that's ruined.
Definitely first round leader bets. I'm not sure what we're planning on doing in terms of first round leader.
I think when there's multiple courses, they tend to maybe swerve it.
We have got first round. Have oh, we? Hang on. I've clicked on the wrong
I
button.
I don't believe
there.
You.
No, we've not got first round leader betting. Yeah, so I don't know if they'll split it up into course by course by course or just not have a first round leader market available.
It's a bit of a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is tough. But the draw can be a factor. And are there any key stats you're looking at this week in the lead up to this?
I did a bit of research on this. Par 4 scoring. I think 5 of the last 6 winners are top par 4 scoring. Sometimes you think par 72s, it's all going to be about par 5 scoring, but par 4s, there are lots of them, obviously. But you've got to keep turning it over and birdieing those holes as well, rather than just taking the easy ones on the par 5s, which maybe everybody does.
Pete Dye design as well?
Yeah, he could play that, because that's the host course, so they play that one twice.
Yeah.
Desert form.
I think desert form's pretty key, and I think I looked at strokes gained off the tee as well. Just getting the ball in the fairway and having a chance to attack these pins. You've got to set up plenty of birdie opportunities. You can get flyers from this from Bermuda rough. So I just wanted a solid guy that was in good form in essence.
Right. Mine was sort of arrived at via looking at who he was. The same price as, and going, how can that be the case?
Yeah, okay. Have you just got one pick then?
Yes.
Yeah, I've just got one pick as well in this event.
Who's going first? Me? You?
I'll go first this
you
time.
Go.
Given you led off in
your...
Oh,
it's the same person. What price?
50 to 1, mate.
I know.
Corey Connors.
Yeah,
I've gone with it at 50 to 1. It's maybe a slightly shorter price than I was hoping for, but it's understandable, I think, because Connors definitely trending in the right direction at the moment. To use that stock cliche. Yeah, bingo phrase. But he's certainly worth a few quid after that brilliant weekend in the Sony Open in Hawaii. Every facet of his game was on song. He fired back-to-back rounds of 64, and he ranked third in strokes gained on approach and first in birdies, or tied first in birdies for the week as well. He's long off the tee, which should set him up nicely on these tracks, and he's finished second behind Cameron Champ in the low-scoring Sanderson Farms at the end of last season too, so I think Corey Connors is going to go particularly well this week at 50 to 1. We've seen another Canadian, Adam Hadwin, with his tremendous course record. Hopefully Connors can join Hadwin
Hadwin
and enhance that course record.
Hadwin shot 59 at La Quinta, didn't he, a couple
of
years
ago? I was on
in
that
ago.
Year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I might have been as well.
80s or 100s. And he
got a place, didn't he?
Yeah, he finished second in the end. I think Hudson Swafford won that year.
Yes. Quite like him this week, actually. Hudson Swafford. He's in at 40s, but I've got someone at 80s.
80 to 1.
Mm. And mainly because, well, I'll how can... It's Danny Willett, can Danny Willett be the same price as Anders Albertsen?
I actually messaged one of my friends and said, Danny Willett's a massive price given that he won the European Tour's event.
Anders Albertsen, 80 to 1. Okay, whatever. But Danny Willett has won the Masters... He's just won that huge event there. He's won the Dubai Desert Classic, Desert Form.
Yeah.
You look at some of the scores he's won with down the years, minus 18, the DP World Tour Championship, minus 19, that Dubai Desert Classic, minus 17, European Masters, minus 18, Nedbank Golf Challenge. So he does well. He's not winning events that are sort of won with minus 7. You might think, oh, the Masters he won with minus 5, does he need a sort of grinders course? But... No, he can go out there and make plenty of birdies. But a surprise entry in the field. I mean, we're guessing a bit. It's his first time there.
I think he's 80 to 1 because it's his first time playing the course, and he's coming back after a reasonably lengthy absence, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, but he absolutely turned the corner, didn't he, last year? And he was sort of hinting at it, and then he was 7th in Turkey, and then 2 starts later wins the DP World Tour Championship in the desert. So he's got 2 desert wins under his belt.
I can see, I understand it entirely. I can see where you're coming from.
The last 2 events, he was ranked 1st and 4th for putting average. So if you need a hot putter, he's got that as well. He was 3rd for greens in reg at the DP World Tour Championship. He sounds confident at any time of, to be honest, but when Danny Willett is confident, I mean, it borders on arrogance, doesn't he? He really does think he's a... And you look at some of the players around him in the betting, like Brian Gay and Harold Varner, he's on a different planet to them. Mm. So, 80 to 1. So it was way too big.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. Danny Willett, 80-1 for Mr. Tindall. So just to pick a piece, I've gone with Connors, you've gone with Willett.
Yeah.
There were lots of players that made the long list. It wasn't a short list this week. We actually opened up first William Hill in terms of prices, and we went 50-1 Aaron Wise, which I thought was
not wise
at all. I think we've probably laid him for quite a few quid. Mm-hmm. I've not spoken to the compilers about it, but he's 30-1 now, and most firms opened 33s, I think. So if you manage to snaffle that early 50-1, you're on a good bet there, because TPC Summerlin's actually his home course, which is obviously in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
plenty of used to playing plenty of desert golf. And he had a chance in this event last year. He's finished 34th and 17th on his two starts. Since then, he's won on tour in a low-scoring event.
Yeah, in Dallas, yeah.
Yeah, opening 50-1 was mad. And yeah, he's a more realistic price now at 30s.
And he's way up in the birdie charts always, so yeah.
He's just a tremendous young talent, isn't he?
Yes.
Aaron Wise, who many people will think will be competing in major championships in the next few years. So, 50s was mad, 30s is more realistic. He was the one that stood out to me when these prices opened.
Yeah, I think so. Hadwin, again, has got the course form. Howell is always playing well at the minute.
This time of year, on the West Coast.
Yeah. Hudson Swafford, who won it a couple of years ago, he was top three last week.
Yeah.
He should go well again. I like him.
Patrick Cantlay, I think at the top of the betting, I liked him at 16-1. I know he's not got much course form here, and his course form was not very good from 6 or 7 years ago now, but he just ended last season in such terrific form.
Yes, definitely.
Strong putter.
I wonder about Mickelson as well this week at 40s.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's got that.
The match was of such poor quality.
Yeah, I mean, there was that, but and it sounds like old news when you say, oh, he's always good in California, but it's not completely historical at that angle. I know he's won like Pebble Beach four times, he's won this twice, I think, but his last three starts in California, he's got a second, the sixth, and the 17th.
Yeah.
So he could still land you the each way cash at 40s, Mickelson. Yeah, I mean, that was fairly awful the way he played against Tiger, but at least he was sort of, he wanted to win it and he was sharpening his game up for it, so it's not like he's put the clubs away. It was only last month. And he's making some positive noise. I mean, he's got so many good performances in this neck of the woods that, and it's a pro-am, and he won't mind the long rounds and jabbering away, so you do get quite a lot of experienced pros doing well in this, so.
That's a positive for Cantlay as well, because this doesn't even feel like a long round to him.
Well, yeah. Although he's not got much crack, though, has he? If he's paired with...
That's fair comment.
someone a bit more lively.
Yeah, I thought Scott Piercy would go pretty well. 40-1, a real desert rat. Finally found his feet in this event last year when finishing sixth. Could see him
Not holding enough putts, maybe. Ryan Palmer's another one who do well in birdie fests.
Yeah.
And on it goes, really. Abraham Anser's going to win again soon.
Yeah,
and miss him, but close this week, but not quite. Putnam as well.
There's so many names to go
on and on. Yeah,
yeah. I think that's why we've narrowed it down to one apiece, just because there are so many.
Yeah, and we're thinking that we'd rather play someone a little bit higher up.
Yeah.
The odds. I mean, Rahm could easily win this back to back, couldn't he?
Yeah, easily.
Going again. Okay. What do you think of Rose, though?
I didn't fancy Rose this week that strongly, to be honest.
Is this a political statement on your behalf?
I just thought I would be surprised if he held enough putts to contend, personally. But
his putting was better last season.
Yeah, it was. What do you think?
Well, I looked at 9-1. I think I've got the equipment change slightly in my head what you're doing.
But it's not had any ill effect. Woodland's playing with Honma, isn't he, I think?
Yeah, I mean, you never quite know. Was it last week?
It's not had any ill effects there.
I think there was Stuart Sink played well last week, and someone said, oh, your move to Ping's gone well. And he actually said, well, I've been using them since May. So you never quite know what who's using what. And you tend to hear the sort of bad news stories of club equipment, like a morality tale. You've chased the money, and now look. But obviously, a lot of people change clubs and do well.
Have you seen that Rory McIlroy's been posting about the tailor-made spider as well and how wonderfully he's putting with it in practice?
Right.
So that will be interesting to see if that materialises next time he's out on the
Do we know when he's out next?
I've no idea.
I think he said he was picking one on the West Coast maybe to play.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him at Torrey Pines, maybe.
Well, it's his style of golf course, isn't it?
So.
I mean, yeah, suits strong drivers of the golf ball. It would be a perfect starting point for McIlroy. Prestigious event as well, isn't it? Woods will be
there.
So
absolutely.
Maybe that'll be a starting point. Shall we wrap up?
Wow, just as we're speaking, Aaron Wise has been cut to 22-1.
Has he really?
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. They will take evasive action on Aaron Wise. We've rambled on for slightly longer than usual this
week.
So apologies if this discombobulates you on your morning drive or wherever you're listening to this podcast. Dave, let's recap the selections.
Yeah, so in Abu Dhabi, I will go a point and a half each way, Louis Oosthuizen at 20s, and half a point each way on Alexander Levy at 100s.
I'm going a point each way on both. Benny Arn at 40-1 and Pablo Larrazabal at 100-1. And we're having a point on the hashtag Your Odds as well, which is Lee Westwood and Joost Luiten both to finish in the top 10, including those ties.
Yep.
And that's 25-1. And in the Desert Classic.
Yeah, in the Bob Hope, I'm calling it now. I'm going to go a point each way, Danny Willett at 80-1.
I like that bet. I'm a point each way, Corey Connors at 50-1 as my sole selection. Dave, thank you for your company.
Thank you, Dave. Are we doing a joint Aaron Wise? We don't want to win. We can't possibly back him at 22s.
Yeah, Aaron Wise definitely in the Desert Classic and in the other one at Houghton Lee.
Thomas Peters, I think, at 20s for
me. Don't want him to win. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter. At Dave Tindall Golf is Dave's Twitter handle. Mine's at D Kellner. Any comments you've got for the podcast, as long as they're positive, tweet us.
Yeah. Even when you win, you get some people not happy.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to the podcast. You can access this at audioboom.com by typing in William Hill. Check out all those odds as well, including the hashtag Your Odds, ahead of this week's events at sports.williamhill.com. And we will be back with more golfing action next week. Good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.